from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in our next hour of Forum, psychiatrist James Gordon and his Center for Mind-Body Medicine work with military veterans as well as inner-city youth and with victims of wars and disasters in places like Haiti, Gaza, and Newtown, Connecticut. He'll join us to discuss his approach to treating psychological trauma. That's next on Forum, right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. In this hour, we're joined by Jim Gordon. And Jim Gordon is a medical doctor and psychiatrist and former chair under President Clinton of the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine. He's also founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine and has worked since 1996 with trauma victims all over the world in Haiti, Kosovo, Bosnia, Gaza, and Israel, as well as those suffering from trauma who are U.S. military veterans, and also has worked, that is, Jim has worked with inner-city youth and with surviving trauma victims from Katrina, Sandy, and the Newtown, Massachusetts massacre. And we welcome him back to Forum. This is his second appearance on the show. Good to have you here.
Great. It's nice to be back.
Well, let's begin by, there's so much to talk about with you, but your successes, I mean, pretty impressive. And yet there are still all those naysayers, not only about alternative medicine. I want to get into that. But let's talk about the successes first. And we're not only talking about successes with trauma victims, but with people who have depression, with people who are suffering from substance abuse and so forth. And a lot of this has to do, at least as I understand the work you've done, not only with alternative medicine, but with placing emphasis on training the self.
Exactly. I think it's a misnomer. You know, I chaired that White House Commission on Alternative Medicine and chaired the Advisory Council at NIH. But the most important, if you will, alternative concept is that self-care has to be central to all care. And that, to me, that's not alternative. That's fundamental. And what we're teaching in the work, whether we're doing it with inner city kids here or vets or people with cancer or heart disease, is we're teaching the fundamentals of self-care, the fundamental of vocabulary and grammar of how the human being works that it's like a lost language to so many people. And we're teaching people that language and giving them very practical things they can do to understand and help themselves and share their experience with one another. And that's got to be fundamental to preventing and treating any kind of chronic problem.
This is not necessarily Tom Ferguson self-medicine, you know, diagnosing and anything. It's taking care of yourself in
ways
that have to do with things that have pretty good track records. I mean, meditation and using all sorts of other what used to be called different holistic modalities.
Yeah, the track record is very impressive now. The data on relaxation and meditation to decrease stress, improve mood, lower blood pressure, be part of reversing heart disease, as in Dean Ornish's program. It's all incredibly solid, and in many instances, it's at least as good as the best pharmaceutical or surgical treatments. This is not a matter of belief anymore. It's a matter of science and a matter of experience.
The first thing you did in Newtown was go in and really work on relaxation. I mean, getting all that stress down.
In Newtown, after the shootings in Sandy Hook, the whole community was in terrible turmoil, and including the psychologists, the doctors, the clergy, all the people who were there to take care of others. So although I worked with some of the families that lost children, the primary work was really supporting the local people, helping them deal with their own stress and their own anxiety as they develop programs for their community.
It's also not only self-care, it's also, when we talk about mind-body medicine, self-awareness. It is techniques to lower blood pressure and stress and hormone levels that, as we say, are pretty tried and true at this point.
Yeah, and the information is there, and it's a question both of learning something about the science, and we teach people, even people who can't read and write, we teach them something about the science. And even more important, we teach people to just pay attention. We're so busy. And the more troubled we are, the more traumatized we are, the more worried we are, the less attention we pay. So our work is really getting people to pay attention. What's going on right now? How are you feeling? Is there tension in your body? And then giving them simple techniques, just like deep breathing, awareness and deep breathing.
And a lot of the places you go into, you work with groups rather than individual therapy. I mean, that seems to be, in fact, much more efficacious. You know?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's more efficacious, and I think there's no way to work with a couple million people individually. What we're doing, for example, in a place like Gaza, is we train 500 people, 500 doctors, nurses, teachers, school counselors, who in turn now have worked with well over 100,000 children and adolescents, many of them in small groups, 10-week-long small groups. And the group is the most economical way to work with people, but it's also the best way for most people. That's the primary care, is in the group, so that everybody is learning and they're getting support from each other and they're learning with each other and they feel a connection. Because one of the worst things when you're traumatized or when you have chronic illness is you feel very isolated. You feel alone. So we create that opportunity for people to come together.
Talking to Dr. James Gordon, psychiatrist, founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington, D.C. He's also clinical professor in the departments of psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School. And you've done pretty well just in terms of raising money for your work. You know, I was looking at your record and I thought, especially in these hard times, I mean, you've got grants from the Department of Defense to work with veterans, but also raised about $2.5 million for the Israeli Trauma Care Program, considerably more than that, about $6 million for Gaza. I mean, I would think, how do you have time to minister to people? You got to do all this fundraising work to get that ministry.
Well, the fundraising is a major issue, and I'm very fortunate. I actually have my local partner is Dave Levy, who runs Generosity Capital. And he's been the major force in helping us to raise money out here in San Francisco and also nationally. And I need help because the needs are great. The level of trauma, the numbers of places that are saying to us, please come, we need you, and we don't have money.
And you're going to be coming to San Francisco. In fact, a training program begins in June on nutrition and then a mind-body medicine training program in October. And we certainly welcome you here to work in a community way as you've done so many places. But there's also this question. It's always kind of loomed in my mind. I know it's come up to you probably frequently. And that is, you're working with so many different cultures. And the idea of PTSD and how to work through it. I mean, I'm always reminded of Anne Fadiman's book about the Hmong people where, know, they thought they were being possessed by demons.
Yes.
I mean, they were because they were having nightmares and all these hallucinations and everything. You're dealing with all those different kind of cultures. The same techniques, universal?
Yes. That's what's so amazing. It's a great question. One of the groups that we're trying to now raise funds for and build a program, first in the upper Midwest and then hopefully over the whole continent, is working with indigenous people, with Native Americans. And at our training that we had out here, we had two Native American elders who came who have been using our work and integrating it into what they're doing with trafficked young girls, with women who've been abused, and others. And what they say, and they say it much more eloquently than I can, is this is the missing piece for us. The work that you're doing is completely in line with our culture, and it's helping us to bring back the spirit of our culture. And I'm so
especially
with
things like song and dance, I would think, yes. I mean, because you do work with storytelling, song, dance, all of these creative things, and this is embedded in indigenous cultures.
That's right. But we're teaching them some practical techniques that they don't have. So they talk about the way you use relaxation or the way you use mental imagery or the way you teach us to use drawings. It's there, but we're helping them to organize it and to see it, that it fits seamlessly with their culture.
Well, we talked about how there is scientific and double-blind studies and peer-reviewed studies and everything that pretty much hold up a lot of what broadly comes under the rubric of alternative medicine. There's a lot of conventional medical criticism, though, and I want to get into this with you. There's even a website called quackwatch.com,
which
is supposedly, I'm sure you're familiar with medical professionals who...
I mean, I haven't looked at it recently, but I am familiar.
I'm sorry, it's quackwatch.org. Well, first of all, I mean, they talk about you. They take you on personally.
Right.
And I want to get this aired and get your response and whatever you have to say about it, a supporter for years of Sri Rajneesh, and saw him through that scandal and the poison conviction, and came here under tax evasion. I mean, this guy has a real clout over him. There's no question about that, I think, in anybody's mind. But they make it seem like, well, you were an acolyte of his for years, were you?
No. I was interested in him. I learned from him. I wrote a book that's extremely critical. Part of the problem with Quack Watch, which is supposedly concerned about science, is how unscientific they are, how they don't really look at the evidence. It's as if I wrote about schizophrenia, which I have done, then you'd say, well, he's schizophrenic because he wrote about schizophrenia. Not that I'm a psychiatrist who's writing about schizophrenia, learning something from schizophrenic people and helping us to understand
them. They take you on even there because they mention your affinity for Jung and R.D. Lang, and they essentially suggest that this is loony stuff. I mean, from their perspective of conventional medicine.
But they're not, from their perspective, perhaps it is. But the problem is that the perspective is so narrow that the work that has been done and that all, you know, if you look at science and you look at the history of science, what is dogma in year one by year 25 is regarded as ridiculous. So the point is not to keep trying to reinforce the dogma of the 19th or early 20th century. The point is to look at the evidence now, see what makes sense, what works, what doesn't. For example, Lang's approach, which you mentioned, in which he and others, and I did this as well in the United States, worked with people with serious psychological problems without medication by creating a community for them. Well, if you look at the evidence that was done by the studies done by the National Institute of Mental Health, by the director of the Center for Study of Schizophrenia, Lauren Mosier, some years ago, done out here in this area, show that non-hospital treatment works at least as well for people who are psychotic, first break psychosis, as hospital treatment on any objective measure, that it costs less, and that the people function far better socially after 6 months. So that's evidence published in the Archives of General Psychiatry.
Yeah, but I suppose the problem may boil down to the fact that Lang himself was probably dipsomaniacal. I mean, you know, he was a serious drunk. And aside from that, came out with these theories, which many people balk at, that said, you know, if you're insane, you're really sane. If you're schizophrenic, in other words, you're not adapting to the insanity of our institutions, therefore you should be deemed sane.
Well, Lang was a brilliant man and a brilliant rhetorician. And he was making a certain point. Now there's a certain truth in the point. If you think, look at our elite colleges. 50% of the kids in those freshman classes are taking medication. Something's wrong. It doesn't
mean. Where's that
mean,
figure from, Jim? I'm sorry, I've never.
I'm sorry.
Where does that figure come from?
Oh, it's been in college. It's cited in my book Unstuck. It's published in many psychiatric journals.
I've never seen anything that high. I'm kind of shocked. Actually,
I was shocked too. But then I talk with parents and I talk with the kids, and the kids are so stressed out, and they're taking medication for attention deficit disorder, for anxiety, for depression. They're taking pills to sleep. Something's not right. So when Lang says, you know, that being insane is a reasonable response to a insane society, you know, it's a rhetorical point, but there's some truth there. If so many kids are on medication, then maybe there's something wrong with the system, not just wrong with the biology of those kids.
Our guest is Dr. James Gordon, again, psychiatrist, founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, and also clinical professor in the departments of psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School. And I remember your book on depression. I think, in fact, we talked about it a bit on the air. And again, you know, some of the things would come under the category or the rubric of unconventional, but a lot of people were helped. I mean, that 7-step program that you provided, a lot of people came out of terrible funks. You know, people couldn't get up in the morning or do anything.
Yeah, I think the issue is, if you're a doctor, you're concerned about what works and what works with human beings. And if you can use the kind of program that I describe in Unstuck, which is very similar to what we use with people who are traumatized, the first message is to people, you can do something to help yourself. One of the problems with medicine, and I go to doctors. I mean, I am a doctor. I go to doctors. If I needed surgery, I'd have surgery. If I needed medication, I would take it. But one of the problems is the larger message has become, leave it to the doctor. Well, it doesn't work for chronic conditions. It works if you're hit by a truck. Yeah, of course you leave it to a doctor. Or if you have an overwhelming infection. But
well, I read these Quack Watch guys, and I must confess, I was thinking, you know, these are like just the tone almost, you know, I'm the doctor, I'm the omnipotent one, I'm arrogant, leave everything to me, I'll prescribe, I'll diagnose, and, yeah. You know, don't... But they bring, you know, were you on a board with of John Max, the Harvard professor?
No, I was on the advisory board to John Max.
The advisory board. No, this was pretty weird stuff. I mean, he thought people were being possessed by aliens and, you know, came.
We're off from unstuck to aliens. That's a long way.
I'm just asking these questions because you've been challenged not only because of unconventional medical views, but you've been challenged personally.
Sure. John Mack, for those who don't know, was a Harvard professor. He won the Pulitzer Prize for a biography of T.E. Lawrence. He got very interested in people who believed they had been abducted by UFOs. So I wrote an article for The Atlantic about Atlantic Monthly, but 20-some years ago, about people who believe they've been abducted by UFOs. So that it's a real phenomenon. Now, what the nature of that phenomenon is, nobody really knows. The hard evidence is not there. Did it change those people's lives? And that's what John was really interested in. John was interested in the aliens. I don't have any experience of the aliens, so I'm not. But I was interested in the fact that for some of those people, what they experienced as an alien abduction was a catastrophe. For others, it was life-transforming, profound. They felt connected to the whole universe. They became interested in ecology and saving the Earth. The point is that it is a phenomenon that has occurred, this experience.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands of people. So John was interested in exploring it. He's a scientist. He was a far out.
But why is your science attacked so much? I mean, it boils down to that. There really is not only a quack watch, but a lot of hostility, enmity against alternative medicine, even though the proof is in the pudding. And the idea somehow that this is taking us into another realm that we shouldn't go to.
What do you? I'll answer, but I'm a psychiatrist, so I'll ask you a question. Why do you think there's so much hostility?
Well, I think there always is when you shake up the status quo, and that's axiomatic in my mind. But I think a lot of it's been directed against you, and that's what I don't understand, because you're a man who has. I mean, there are people out here who really revere you. I mean, they talk about you in the highest iconic terms, and these are people I respect. And the work you've done is just extraordinary. I mean, going into places where most people, I mean, in terms of just trying to help the traumatized, my hat's off to you.
Thank you. I think the most threatening piece is the piece that has to do with self-care, actually. I mean, they focus on, alien abductions or maybe homeopathy, seems kind of weird. But I think the deepest threat is exactly what you're saying. It is a threat to that order in which the doctor, the hospital, the insurance company, they're on top, and the patient essentially takes orders from them. The medicine that I'm most interested in, and that people like Dean Ornish, who's in this area, or John Kabat-Zinn in Massachusetts, or Andy Weil in Arizona, Herb Benson at Harvard, what we're interested in really is giving people the tools to understand and take care of themselves, to treat and prevent chronic illness, to create a system that actually works. There's no question our healthcare system doesn't work.
I'm funny you put Andy Weil in there because he's been attacked for different kinds of reasons.
But we're going to be, the more visible you become, the more you're going to be attacked. I mean, it just seems to go with the territory. And so I think especially for me when I was chairing the White House Commission, and when I chaired the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy, I invited all those Quack Watch people to testify. One showed up, to his credit, but the rest said, oh, no, I don't want to testify. I said, look, tell us what you think. And part of my difficulty with them is that if millions of people are using an approach, then we need to find out if it works or not.
Well, let's talk about what works again. I mean, in terms of all of your experience, and you've gone to so many different places and used so many different forms of alternative care, what really works best in a general sense for trauma?
So I would take it out of the realm of alternative. What we're doing is fundamental. This is basic care for people. So the most important thing, the thing that we do everywhere we go, is we bring people together in a group. You go to a place like Gaza or Haiti after the earthquake, people feel so isolated. Everybody knows. I mean, you look around you, your neighbor's house is a shambles. That one's aunt got killed. That one's mother got killed. But inside, most people feel like I'm so alone. It's just me, because the nature of trauma is to be very isolating. So we bring people together. That's number one. Number two, and this is what I say in the beginning of Unstuck, we say there are simple things that you can do to help yourself. And we start teaching them right away. So, for example, when I'm working with a group of local doctors, nurses, teachers, priests, nuns, whoever they are, I say to them initially, let's do soft belly breathing. Let's breathe deeply in through our nose, out through our mouth. And I take them through an exercise for several minutes. And they breathe deeply and they relax and they watch the thoughts come and they watch the thoughts go. And after 5 minutes, I say, and these are people I've never seen before. I'm usually speaking through an interpreter in a language that I don't know. I don't know Creole. I don't know Arabic. I don't know Hebrew. I don't know Albanian. But after 5 minutes, 80 to 90% of the people in that room will, if I say, anybody notice change? They raise their hands and they say, I feel more relaxed. My shoulders are not so tight around my head. My thoughts are a little slower. The room looks a little brighter.
These are also ancient techniques you're talking about.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly. These have been used for thousands and thousands of years. So people have the experience. We were working in Haiti, and we were working in Jacmel. We have our center of our work is in Port-au-Prince, but Jacmel's over the mountains a few hours away.
Didn't you work with Dr. Paul Farmer, too?
We've trained a number of people from Paul Farmer's, from Partners in Health. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to do more with them. They're in the Central Plateau, and they do great work. And if you're doing work, imagine working in Haiti, the poorest country in the hemisphere. 250,000 people have been killed. Only 40% of the kids are in school. I mean, the people, almost, you know, most of the population's living below the poverty line, no matter how low you define it. So we're teaching these people some things that they can do to relax, be a little bit more peaceful, deal with their situation a little better. They have that experience, and they go back that very first night. These are the people we're training. I'm thinking of one of the farmers who's the leader of the local farmers group. He went back, and he called his neighbors. He said, listen, he reported the next day, I've learned this thing today. I felt more relaxed. I want to teach you, because nobody in the village is sleeping at night. So they get, and then they come back the next day, and they said, I slept a little better. So people, this is, you asked what makes the difference. People have an experience, they have some hope, and they build on that. Because if you can begin to make one small change in your life, then maybe you can make others.
It's incremental.
Yeah. Exactly.
Dr. James Gordon with us here in studio for the hour, and you can be with us as well. He, again, is founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington and clinical professor in the Departments of Psychiatry and Family Medicine at Georgetown Medical School. We welcome you and, in fact, invite you to join the program. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. Number of ways to communicate. We'd like to hear your thoughts, and we'd like to hear your questions or comments, so join us now. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour with James Gordon about treating trauma holistically. He is a psychiatrist and heads up the Center for Mind-Body work with the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington, D.C., and has worked with military veterans, inner-city youth, victims of wars and disasters throughout the world, places like Haiti, Gaza, Newtown, Connecticut. And we're talking about really approaches to treating psychological trauma and some of the shelling that Jim has had to fend off through the work that he's done through the years. Let me go right to your calls here, and we'll begin, Melody, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. So I'm really interested because I have actually suffered from mental illness for 15 years. I've been in and out of the hospital over 100 times, and it's just recently I started working with my friend Nathan. He's been giving me these vitamins from it's developed in Canada. He's been stable for 10 years because he found these vitamins called EM Power, like EMP, and basically, like, they help. I mean, it was developed, and he watched it on something on a Discovery Channel, and it was about saying the impossible cure, because bipolar, usually that's like lifetime, and you're stuck on meds forever. And, you know, I've really struggled. They haven't been able to find the right medication combination for me for 15 years, and it's not living. It wasn't living at all. And now, like, I've been taking these vitamins, and, I mean, you still have to transition. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, but I feel so much better. I'm able to sleep. I haven't been crying. I haven't been having a lot of the issues that I had in the past. And I'm just really grateful that there's other, you know, alternatives. I do see a holistic therapist, too.
Melody, let me jump in and get some response from Dr. Gordon, because usually, like you said, bipolar struggles are not necessarily in many people's minds curable, and there's a lot of meds used. But, Jim, you use a lot of vitamins, nutrition, this sort of thing. What have you seen in the way of results?
Well, I think if people look at Unstuck is basically about depression. I've had much more experience with depression than with bipolar disorder. I would say what the evidence that I have read, what I have done in my practice for 40-some years, is that the vast majority of people you can work with without medication for depression, it's a combination approach. You can change biology with meditation. You can change biology with exercise. There are supplements that are clearly demonstrated, omega-3 fatty acids, for example, that contribute to treating and preventing depression. Sometimes a selenium or chromium or B6 or B12 deficiency. All these things need to be looked at. You need to look at it in a holistic way. Psychotherapy is at least as effective as any kind of antidepressant. So you put together a comprehensive program, and that's what Unstuck is about. The evidence for bipolar disorder is not – that's a more sort of the more obvious biological issues that are there with it. Now, using the same approach in Unstuck – many people have made a significant difference in the way they feel with bipolar disorder. They've been able to change their biochemistry, change their psychology, reach out to people in different ways, have a different sense of what's possible. I'm not saying that they should rush to get off medication. That's a whole other issue.
Well, it's helped Melody, obviously, and it brings in the whole discussion about placebo effects, which are real.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying that vitamins are placebos, but, you know.
No, the vitamins are not, because they've been tested against placebo. But placebo, you're absolutely right. Psychotherapy is the kind of mobilization of the placebo effect. It's the mobilization of belief. It's the mobilization of activity on your own behalf. It's a sense of conviction and possibility. And it's beautiful. And everybody's known this for thousands of years, long before we called it psychotherapy. We called it confession or coming together or ritual.
Well, since you mentioned confession and you mentioned Dean Ornish before, I think when anybody talks about holistic health, they often talk about the spiritual and integrating the spiritual. And the fact of the matter is that people are – I mean, I remember as a kid watching faith healing and thinking, wow, what's going on here? This person's been in a wheelchair for years and suddenly they got Jesus and they're getting out of the wheelchair. I mean, spiritual elements can really heal somehow.
Spiritual elements are crucial. And I would say that one of the major causes of the dysfunction – and of difficulties in overcoming trauma is the lack of meaning and purpose in people's lives and the absence of a sense of connection to something larger than themselves. We're working with Native American people, and we're hoping to do a really large-scale program with them. And as we begin, we're working with people who are working with these kids who've been trafficked. You know, they've been sold into slavery as 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old kids. And they've lost a sense of who am I as a human being. So part of the therapy, if you will, is mind-body techniques and self-expression, but it's also connection to their spiritual tradition, that they are a human being and that they are part of an ancient people who are connected to this earth. That's important, and that's important for all of us. It's important in my life that I have a sense of meaning and purpose. I think it is for most people.
We'll bring in more of our callers. And Deborah, you're up next. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been suffering from depression for at least 20 years. I've been in the hospital about 10 times. And my cycle is kind of every 2 years or so I'm in the hospital. But for the last 5 years, high five, I have not been in the hospital at all. And I attribute that a lot to having a talk therapist who I've had for a little while instead of just 1 year at a time. But in the last 9 months or so, I was very skeptical, but I was convinced that I ought to give somatic therapy a try. And so there's this whole mind-body experience that I've never had before, and the emphasis is on experience of different ways of handling my trauma, which was 40 years ago. So I just wanted to say that it works very well with talk therapy, and I've really seen an improvement just in the last 9 months.
Well, good of you to share that, Deborah, and continued improvement, we hope, for you. Thank you for the call. You want to comment, Jim?
No, I think it's really important. In one of the sections of Unstuck, I talk about finding what I call a guide. And most of us, when we're depressed, we need to have somebody else. And it's important. There's a lot of detail on it, but I think the most important thing is to find somebody from whom you feel what Carl Rogers called unconditional positive regard. I mean, that you really are worthwhile. I'm paying attention to you, I'm there for you, and I'm going to help you. And that cuts across all the different theoretical perspectives, whether it's cognitive or psychoanalytic or Jungian. I think that's the most fundamental piece of it.
We're getting some comments from listeners on the website, and you can add yours, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or email us, forum@kqed.org. Here's Ben, who writes, going to these war-torn or disastrous areas must be traumatizing itself. How do you let go of the trauma from seeing these places and also seeing the lack of possibility for these people?
Well, that's a great question. For me, doing something about the trauma, going, is healing. I remember I'd begun to work in Kosovo during the war there, and when the Albanians were trying to fight for their freedom, and we were working during the war. And then the NATO bombing came, and I was watching it on television, and I said, I can't stand this. So I flew to Greece, hitchhiked to Macedonia, went to the border, began working, doing medical work in the Red Cross tent, and then began to set up a program to work with the Kosovar refugees. So doing the work is healing for me. Now, as far as trauma, it is difficult at times. You see, I mean, sometimes it's frightening, you know, when people are shooting and you're around there, you see some of the worst things that human beings have ever done to one another. I mean, people slaughtering children, and you hear about it, and you meet children who've witnessed it, and sometimes meet the perpetrators as well. So it can be traumatizing. What we do is when we work with a team, we every day after we've done our work, and I bring over an international team, is we do our training, we do our site visits, we meet with people, and then we get together and we talk and we share our own experience. We're always using the same techniques we're teaching other people for ourselves, the relaxation, the meditation. We use a lot of work with movement and dance and the group support. So we're working on ourselves as we're working with others. And we also feel very connected to local people. So all the work that we do in Kosovo or Israel or Gaza or Haiti, we don't have internationals who stay there with the people. We build up a local team so they become part of our community as well. And so we're building a community and we're working together and we become like family. If people want to find out more about our work and see some videos, the website is cmbmcharliemarybettymary.org, and you can go on the website.
And find out more about coming to San Francisco on your website as well?
Yes, the programs in San Francisco, our focus really is on self-awareness, self-care, and mutual help. So in June, we're doing our nutrition program, which is it's a four-day program. It's wonderful. We're doing it down in Redwood City, I think June 5th to 9th. And it's the course that all of us wish we'd had in medical school and that we wish every doctor had had. And it's available, and you don't have to be a doctor or a nurse. You can be just somebody who's really interested in nutrition, and we'll teach you the basics of what food is and how it's evolved and how agriculture's affected it and what's the biochemistry and how you use it clinically, and we have fabulous meals. And then in October, we come back and we begin a cycle of training in mind-to-body medicine, learning relaxation, meditation, guided imagery, how to work with biofeedback, and drawings and dance. And we've trained now 5,000 people around the world have come through the first phase of the training. We'll be back here. And one of the things that Dave Levy, who heads up our fundraising effort, is doing is looking to raise money to bring people from local programs, programs that are working with disadvantaged kids, programs working with the homeless, with vets, in low-income communities, so that we can bring these skills into those communities. So we welcome people's support of Generosity, which is Dave's organization, which is helping us. We welcome people to come to the training and to help us bring the people who need to be there.
What motivates you, though? I mean, you get into the whole question that this listener raises about, you're being exposed to trauma. And I mean, I know, you're a healer and dedicated healer and all that, but this can be overwhelming. What you expose yourself to, and it can seep into your emotions, and it can take them over, really. I mean, some of it can just be just too tough to observe and to be a witness to.
Well, I'm smiling. The listeners can't see me smiling, because what came into my mind when you asked that was we work with New York City firefighters after 9/11. And one of the people we worked with was a New York City firefighter lieutenant, very tough, very smart guy, whose name happened to be Kevin Guy. And at some point after he'd gotten to know us, at first he was doing these techniques with us, and he looks up and he says, "What is this, some kind of chick flick?" But he got into it, and he became our greatest champion in the department. And at a certain point, he said to me something like, "Hey, Jim," this is the way he talked, "Hey, Jim, I get it. You're just like us," meaning firefighters. I said, "Well, how so, Kevin?" He said, "You like to help people, and you like to be where the action is." And that's a pretty good description.
That's succinct.
That's why I became a doctor. I like to help people. It's my joy to help people. And I like it. I like excitement. And I also when there's chaos, I like to bring a little bit of order there and a little bit of peace into it.
You're an Aristotelian man. Make order out of chaos. Lisa tweets, "What about the big pharmaceutical companies? Don't they play a role in stigmatizing alternative medicine?"
I think they play something of a role. It's not, but they're so big. You look at the evening news on television. Nobody's getting up there at the beginning and end of program having people relax a little bit. You're having ads for drugs all the time. They're so big. They're so powerful. They're pushing their model. And the problem is it's just not working. So yes, I don't feel them as my vocal opponents, but they're clearly trying to dominate the market.
Well, here are, I guess, what we could call a couple of opponents. Let me just get your response to these criticisms. A listener writes, "Two separate things, mindfulness, meditation, relaxation, et cetera, have good clinical results. However, alternative medicine, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathy, et cetera, do not have valid science that support them. His book Unstuck, Your Guide to the 7-Stage Journey Out of Depression, is endorsed by Mehmet Oz. Enough said. If it walks like a duck..." I don't know what his brief is with Mehmet Oz. He's not clarifying that. But I think there's an important binary there between those things that do have good clinical results. I'm not sure there's much about homeopathy.
I couldn't agree with you and the listener more, except the comment about Mehmet Oz. Mehmet was a remarkable cardiovascular surgeon, and you may or may not agree with all of his opinions. But the point is, in Unstuck, I make very clear what the science is and what it's not. And I actually invite the listener to read the book and see what he or she thinks about it. Because, for example, the evidence, acupuncture was mentioned. The evidence for acupuncture in treating depression is pretty good, not fabulous, but it looks like it's of some benefit. The evidence for pain is good. the evidence for being able to decrease medication if you have chronic pain with acupuncture. The evidence for acupuncture treating the nausea and vomiting of chemotherapy is good. So it's really, these are scientific questions. These are not subject generalizations. Homeopathy, the evidence is not as good. So let's look at the evidence. Let's not be, make sweeping statements about what's right, what's wrong, what's alternative. The point is that what was alternative, when I started talking about mind-body medicine publicly, I would go give grand rounds at medical schools 40 years ago, everybody thought that meditation was total hooey. There was nothing to it. Now this listener is saying, well, there's evidence for it. That's changed. What was not only alternative but stigmatized 40 years ago is now being seen as part of the mainstream.
Here's Carol writes, a little annoying to hear Dr. Gordon complain and Mr. Krasny accept those claims of being attacked. The important issue is about the evidence supporting so-called alternative therapies. The fact is that alternative often means made up and lacking any evidence to support their use. People who sell such therapies are willing to make money by making unsubstantiated claims while at the same time being unwilling to conduct research which could confirm those claims. It's obviously not what I'm talking about. Let me just get that on the record. But she says it's unethical to charge people for unproven treatments. Quackwatch and Science-Based Medicine are great websites for addressing this issue. And then another listener, Iris, says if they were honest, both conventional and so-called alternative practitioners would admit that neuroscience is deficient in neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, neurochemistry, diagnostics, clinical studies versus anecdotal stories, and effective treatment protocols. Hopefully, 20 years from now, medical science will provide the answers. Do you know the mechanisms for how your treatments work? What body functions without a mind?
It's all fine. We don't know the mechanism. We've used treatments for hundreds of years. We didn't long before we knew the mechanism of the use of aspirin, for example. But it worked, and there were clinical trials showing it worked before we really had much of a clue about mechanisms at all. Let's look for the mechanisms, but also let's look at what works. Let's look at the evidence. To treat somebody, to make a claim for any therapy. And if you look at some of the therapies, for example, the therapies for type 2 diabetes that were heavily promoted, that made billions of dollars for pharmaceutical companies, that caused people to die from heart attacks. That's unconscionable. So anytime you promote something that as valid that you have no evidence for, that's unethical. And I totally agree with it, whether we call it conventional or alternative or anything else. Let's see what works. Let's find the evidence. But we can't wait for all the mechanisms. So, for example, we work with movement, with people who are traumatized. We have them shake their bodies to get rid of some of the stress and then some dancing and celebration. I don't have an isolated study showing that it works. I have a randomized controlled trials, the gold standard of scientific research, showing that our whole model, which includes movement and dance and drawings, works. But people say of that experience, I felt better. I felt more relaxed.
We also get them out of their head.
Exactly.
The pale cast of thought, as Hamlet put it, suddenly becomes less. I just want to read one more email and then go to the callers, because this is Barbara who writes, human beings are bundles of biology and belief. Most are capable of reason but still seek guidance. In a frantic world where few have the time or energy to experiment with ideas or ways of physically taking care of themselves, it has become more difficult to know what to believe, much less what to do. Ultimately, we all can benefit from eating less and moving more. I ferment my own krauts and consume other fermented products. Alternative ways of approaching my own health has certainly worked for me. My approach has evolved over time, and I've tried to become knowledgeable and proceed with caution. I personally believe allopathic medicine is good for some things, but sadly oversold. It's a reasonable response, and we'll go to more of your responses by phone. William, hi, you're on.
Hi. My question is about alternative medicine use, or I don't know if you would call it, or illegal, but things like DMT, LSD. I know LSD, when it was first discovered, had amazing results in treating trauma and, abuse and things like that, and DMT too. So I wanted to know, what your guests had to say about that.
What about, we've done whole shows on this, about EMT, about LSD, but what about with trauma? I mean, those kinds of things. What do we know?
You mean using psychedelics as treating trauma?
Psychedelics or hallucinogens or ecstasy, whatever.
See, I think there are interesting pulses. I've seen that work, for example, with addicts in Brazil who used ayahuasca, and it's been very helpful. But I'm working with hundreds of thousands and hopefully millions of people. That's not the way I'm working. I'm working to create whole communities where people learn fundamental skills to help and heal themselves. And our research, and people can look on cmbm.org for our published research in refereed scientific journals, is showing that this method works. And I want a method that I can use with hundreds of thousands of people.
But if ayahuasca works better, or if peyote works better, or
that's great. But are you going to use? Are you going to come to Haiti and work with 9 million people with peyote?
You need a lot of stuff.
And there are six psychiatrists in Haiti. That's not going to happen.
A whole country. Dina, hi, you're on. Thanks for waiting. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. My name is Dina, actually.
Dina, I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for reiterating your effort to build community support is what I'm hearing as well. In some respect. So I'm requesting that you speak to what can be done in regards to people with trauma who've been misdiagnosed with depression or bipolar or ADD. And I'm one of those people. I was misdiagnosed for over 25, 30 years with depression. It turns out I have post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. I'm also a meditator. I'm a Vipassana meditator for the last 13 years. That's helped some. I go to an early childhood somatic therapist for the last 16 months, which is making a lot of headway. I eat healthy, and I had a big setback 5 months ago, and I really, like, in my case, I could also use an advocate, a coach, you know, someone missing in my healing team, and for the last 5 months, I've been really suffering, so I have a twofold request here. One, to speak to all those people, you know, what can we do with all these people who are being treated for depression, bipolar, ADD, and in fact, they have post-traumatic stress, and they're not getting the support they need.
Yeah, the real question, Dina, is misdiagnosis. And Jim Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of emphasis on diagnosis. And diagnosis can be important. I'm more sort of, to use a fancy word, a phenomenological. I'm looking at what's going on with this human being. And my focus really is on providing basic tools for everyone to use and working with them step by step as they discover what's going on. And some of it may fit into PTSD. Some of it has elements of depression. They're very mixed picture. Sometimes people are bipolar. Sometimes there are physiological issues that are there. The idea is to work with the whole human being, who is much more than any single diagnosis, and to use approaches that are tailored for that human being, and then to provide ongoing support for them. And that's what we do. That's what we train people to do.
Let me thank you, Dina. Good luck to you. Dina, excuse me. And let me get another caller on from Sebastopol. And that's you, Julia. Hi. Welcome to Forum.
Hi, Michael. Thanks. A long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm wondering if Dr. Gordon has had any experience with EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which is tapping on acupuncture points and talking about what's going on.
You know, I've had a little bit of experience. I've been in some workshops where people have taught. It's a tap, as you say, it's a tapping technique where people tap acupuncture points on different parts of the body and use it as a kind of deconditioning. I would guess a kind of psychophysiological deconditioning. Some people tell me it's wonderful. They have published some. There have been some studies published on it. My own experience is limited. It's not something we've integrated into our work, although the people who do our work, some of them also do EFT. So I'm not really the I think it's something that's worth taking a look at. I would say the evidence is just – they're just beginning to accumulate some evidence for it.
Thank you for the call, Julia, and we'll go right to another caller. Michael, that's you. Hi, Michael. You're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really love the discussion. It seems like a lot of the techniques that you guys are, or a lot of the effects of the techniques you're talking about is really about reference relaxation is accessing the frontal lobe of the brain, which is really the part of the brain responsible for the body going into more of that rest and digest function. So I practice a technique called network spinal analysis that does that on a hands-on level, and it seems like a lot of the techniques you're talking about are more, you know, meditation, breathing, talk therapy, things like that. So I just thought if you guys can speak to more hands-on modalities, kind of like the last caller, that help access those higher centers of the brain to stimulate these responses.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Michael. In fact, I'm looking at an email here that says, I believe laying on of hands is the single most healing treatment for virtually any ill.
Well, you know, there's people have been doing it for a long time and have reported very good results. Some of the studies that have been done on different forms of laying on of hands have shown benefits. I think the thing for our work, everything that we do is self-care. So everything that we teach people is something that those people who come to our groups or work with us individually, that they can learn to do for themselves down to the age of 3. And hands-on, many of the hands-on therapies require somebody to do it with you or for you. So we do teach people. Sometimes we'll teach kids how to do self-massage, for example, to relax themselves. But the focus is really, in my work, on teaching self-care. I'm not saying that the other approaches may not be helpful. But what I want to do is I want to create communities where people are coming together to help themselves, to be with each other, to support one another with techniques that anybody can do.
Well, let me ask you to give out your website again then, because people can find out more information.
Website is www.cmbm.org, cmbm.org. And please take a look, write to us, come to our trainings. We welcome people. You don't have to be a professional to come to the training. You have to be somebody who wants to learn what we have to teach and share it with others.
Jim, thank you for being with us. James Gordon, again, psychiatrist, founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington, clinical professor in psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And again, we'd like to thank our interns for all their hard work, intelligence, and dedication these past few months. They are Keelan Cronin, Nick Zabrowski, Victor Valle, Angela Johnson, and Aaron Newport. We wish them the best. Hope they continue to integrate radio into their futures. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.